Hello, I hope you are having a lovely day today. Today we are going to dive into contentedness, motivation, and all things encouragement when it comes to being home economists or homemakers or keepers of our home. I think it's easy for life just to slip through our fingertips and you just end up going through the motions and things come up in our life that are beyond our control. Sometimes we just need this renewed vision for momentum with building a home and keeping a home, a renewed purpose that this is what God has made us to do, and so He is fully equipping us to do what we were made to do. I get a lot of feedback from you guys that you like videos on building the home economy and having a vision for building your home. So today I want to focus on creating the things that you consume. And this is going to look very different for every household. I think that is the most important thing for women and homemakers, to stop comparing yourself. And this is an obvious thing, but I think it's so easy to do, to just fall into the trap of comparison, but to stop comparing yourself to where other people are in their life and their walk, because we all have very unique circumstances. Even when it comes down to homemaking and being helpers to our husbands, that is going to look very unique for every household, because every husband has a unique mission. So our role as wife is going to look unique to our husband's mission. So we can't go and see what someone else is doing on Instagram or on YouTube or your next door neighbor and compare yourself to where they're at or what they're doing in their daily life, because it might be a different season for them than it is for you, or there might be a financial difference. And so that is why it's so important for you and your husband to be on the same page with the vision for your family, to have a vision and a direction for where you want to go as a family. So then that is what you keep at the front of your mind, the direction that you're going as a family. And then you can go and take inspiration from other people and bring that into your unique home economy. And what does that look like for you? It's nice to be inspired by what other people are doing, but then to bring it back to the vision that you and your husband have for your family and how that works for you. Because then, instead of thinking of all the things you don't have or all the ways you're not where you want to be, instead it's turning your heart to gratefulness and your attitude of having a grateful heart of, actually, we've come a long way for the vision of where we're going. Everything we've done is still moving progressively towards that vision. Or you could be someone who all of a sudden God has totally redirected your path. That was us in 2018. We had this idea in our mind to be missionaries, and then Scott started working for an agrarian business, and we realized the importance of community, local economy, growing our own food, homesteading, all of that, and it totally redirected our path to the point where we wanted to get chickens. And I thought, this is totally different from missions or ministry, is the idea of having chickens. And this was before homesteading was popular or cool. I really did not have a vision for having chickens or growing our own food. And I actually was like, okay, God, if this is the direction that you're pushing us in, I need to know that you're in this and that we're not actually called to be missionaries, but we're called to be missionaries in America by growing our own food and learning to live locally, live within our means, have a productive household economy rather than a consumptive household economy, that is a good purpose. And I remember as clear as day, and I know some people are like, you should never do this, but this is what I did. I closed my Bible and I asked God to give me a word, and I opened my Bible to Deuteronomy 28, and the words came off the page at me, and I will read them to you, because if you are asking God, should we buy land? Should we grow our own food? And this is what you open the Bible to. My jaw dropped and I felt like God was speaking directly to me. So Deuteronomy 28 says, "And if you faithfully obey the voice of the Lord your God, being careful to do all his commandments that I command you today, the Lord your God will set you high above all the nations of the earth, and all these blessings shall come upon upon you and overtake you if you obey the voice of the Lord your God. Blessed shall you be in the city, and blessed shall you be in the field. Blessed shall be the fruit of your womb, and the fruit of your ground, and the fruit of your cattle, the increase of your herds, and the young of your flock. Blessed shall be your basket and your kneading bowl. Blessed shall you be when you come in, and blessed shall you be when you go out. The Lord will cause your enemies who rise against you to be defeated before you. They shall come out against you one way and flee before you seven ways. The Lord will command the blessing on you in your barns and in all you undertake, and he will bless you in the land that the Lord your God is giving you. The Lord will establish you as a people holy to himself, as he has sworn to you, if you keep the commandments of the Lord your God and walk in his ways. And all the peoples of the earth shall see that you are called by the name of the Lord, and they shall be afraid of you. The Lord will make you abound in prosperity in the fruit of your womb, and in the fruit of your livestock, and in the fruit of your ground, within the land that the Lord swore your fathers to give you. The Lord will open to you his good treasury, the heavens, to give the rain to your land in its season, and bless all the work of your hands. And you shall lend to many nations, but you shall not borrow. The Lord will make you the head and not the tail, and you shall only go up and not down if you obey the commandments of the Lord your God, which I command you today, being careful to do them. If you do not turn aside from any of the words that I command you today, to the right or to the left, to go after other gods to serve them. On my channel with Scott, we have a video where Scott reads this over this most beautiful scenery that we took with the drone footage in South Africa. If you just want to lay down and meditate on God's word, I'll link that video below. Reading that, I thought, God, you're speaking to me. You're in this. This was in 2018, 6 years ago, and we are still not where we want to be. You know what? We have still to this day not had chickens. We've bought land, we've sold land, we've had gardens every year since then, except 2020 because we were stuck in South Africa. But even then we grew trees, so maybe that counts. But we have been on a very slow journey of taking God at his word, doing the next thing with what's in front of us, and learning to create the things that we consume with the means that we have. And so for the season that you're in, with the vision that you have, what can you look around and think, with the resources that I have and with the time that I have, what is something that I consume that instead of consuming it, I can create it? And that is how we create a home economy, is by beginning to produce things within our home that we would normally go out and buy. And that could be something as simple as cold brew. I love going to coffee shops. I love the experience of going to local coffee shops. We have one that we always go to, and I love the baristas there, and it's so much fun, but coffee shops are expensive. And so rather than having this desire in me to go out of the house, buy cold brew, bring it back home, or even sit in the coffee shop, and sometimes I'll edit my videos there, I have had to reframe of, okay, that's a fun thing, but that needs to be the extent of what it is a luxury fun thing, not a must-have in my life. So I'm back into the habit of making cold brew again in our home. And I've shared videos on this in the past. When we lived in Kentucky, we used to go to this co-op all the time. My sister and I would get our cold brew from there, and it's the best cold brew. And the one day, the girl told me the recipe for how they make it, and she said, we grind up the coffee beans, take a heaping cup, put it in a half-size mason jar, and put it in the fridge for about 18 hours, then we strain it. And so that is what I do. Sometimes I strain it before the 18-hour mark if I start it late at night and I realize I want cold brew in the morning, and it only ends up brewing for about 12 hours. And sometimes it goes over the 18-hour mark. So there's a lot of flexibility with that. You can always dilute it with water if you think it's too strong. But that has been a consistent recipe that usually always works for me. And I do find it's best to grind your own beans. But simple things like that, thinking of what is something that I consume that I can make in our home rather than spending money buying it. You could even look at your money tracker. Where is a lot of your money going? And is there something that you can now create in your home rather than spending extra money on it because you're paying for something that someone else has spent the time to create? I think all of us are on the journey of trying to create more and more food from scratch in our home. That's the never-ending journey of, okay, what is the next thing that I can learn to make that I used to buy? And all of those things do take time. So making it really simple, it can be very overwhelming. Again, especially if you're on Instagram or YouTube or any Pinterest website, whatever, and you see where someone else is, and you look at your life and think, that is nowhere near where I am, and then you get discouraged. Well, one, we don't know their story and how long it took for them to get to that place, and what can you do right now? Simplify it. Instead of having this big vision of, we want to have this picture of a life, we want to do all of these things, we want to be as healthy as possible, I want to make all this food from scratch, that can be so overwhelming. Instead of just bringing it back and slowly building your home economy over time and realizing that you are going to be spending your whole life learning skills and learning new things, and it's okay to go the turtle route and slowly and steadily build upon your skill sets. That's what I did with bread making. I actually struggled so much with sourdough and learning to make sourdough. It was very hard. And then my friend Julia, she bought me a sourdough kit with the book Flour, Water, Yeast, I think that's what it's called. And in it, he shows you how to do a sourdough starter. And I had already failed twice at this point. The one time I had bought someone's dried sourdough, it never bubbled or did anything. And then another time it went moldy. And so I decided I was gonna try it again. It worked, I got my sourdough going, and I was so pumped. So I did that for a year, and then I ended up buying a grain mill because I thought, you know, I'm doing all this work to make sourdough, but I'm using dead flour because it has to be dead in order for it to be shelf stable. And I have a full video on everything I've learned about grinding your own flour because it is an art form. For me, most recipes have to be changed, and it's a lot of trial and error. It's not just buying a grain mill and all of a sudden you have fresh milled flour and life continues on. It is a learning curve. It's been 2 years now since I've had my grain mill, and now I am learning to sprout my wheat berries so that way we can have sprouted wheat berry fresh milled flour, which to me is like the ultimate nutritious levels. But this has been a 3 year journey from the time that I started sourdough to now sprouting my own wheat berries, dehydrating them, and grinding them to make flour. It was not something all at once. And sometimes I get messages from people who say they are not able to start a fresh milled flour sourdough starter from scratch. My advice would be don't. I've never tried it because I have my sourdough starter going from before I started grinding flour. So I just used that and turned it into a fresh milled flour starter by adding fresh milled flour to it, and it works fine. But I've never started a starter from scratch with fresh milled flour. I would say just buy good quality flour, get your starter going, and then you can switch it over to fresh milled flour. Because, I don't know, after 3 feedings, it is probably going to be mostly your fresh milled flour anyways. So if it's causing you a headache to start with fresh milled flour and you can't get the starter going, one of you said that it got moldy, then I would take a step back and just make it very simple and try it with the flour. Again, it's having this big idea and goal in mind, but then not being able to achieve it because you're trying really hard to get there, and then you end up disappointed and you've lost a lot of resources and time, and then you're like, is it even worth trying this? So bring it back to simplifying things. That's what I do with the garden. We have had a garden now, well, since our first year of marriage. We started, our first garden ever was actually just in pots. We moved 4 times our first year of marriage, and that was because we did not want to get tied down to a lease, because our goal was to go to South Africa, and we could only go to South Africa once Scott got his green card, because he couldn't leave the country while he was in his immigration process. So we didn't know how long that was going to take. Our goal was to not get tied down. So we ended up moving 4 times, and then by the time he got his green card, we needed to start making money to save up to be able to afford a plane ticket, all of that good stuff that is involved with coming into the country the right way. We ended up that whole year, we moved 3 times with flower pots of herbs and lettuce. And so that's where we started, was just moving with flower pots. And then the next year, we again started doing a little bit more. And then the next year, we had our land in Kentucky. We had 11 acres, and I did a raised bed garden there. And it was so fun. I learned so much that season. Our theme that year was, well, now we know, because everything we did, I think, was wrong. Our spacing was wrong. I grew things that I didn't even really consume a lot of, and the things that we ate a lot of, I didn't even think of growing it. And so each year we have built upon things that we've learned in the previous season of things that worked, things that didn't work. Our 2021-2022 garden season was the absolute best. We followed Richard Perkins' market style garden. We brought wood chips in that we got for free, and we bought compost, and it was beautiful to the point where the second year that we had it, it was even more beautiful, because that is another thing with planting a garden and staying in one place is each year the garden builds on itself and there's perennials and things come up again. And so once you start it right, then it only gets better as you go because you've created a good foundation, which is what we kind of failed to do in our last garden season. We didn't know we were going to live here. We were questioning if we were going to buy this house or not. And then we did decide to buy the house. And by that point, it was the end of March. So then it was like pedal to the metal, let's get this garden going. So we ended up just digging into the ground, and that caused all types of problems, not bringing in dirt. We didn't have any compost because we weren't saving it because we didn't know if we were going to live here, all of that stuff. Even then, it still ended up being a productive garden. And we learned to go back to the ways that we know works with the Richard Perkins market style garden. So that's what we're doing again this year. And even down to my seed starting, in the past, I would always buy coconut core. There's a guy that we watched on YouTube years ago, Jag Singh, and he recommended using coconut core to start your seeds and vermiculite. And so that's what I did. And it worked beautifully. It worked so perfectly. And then last year, again, because we got started late, I didn't have time to order my coconut core because I ordered that online from Uncle Jim's Worm Farm. You can get an 11-pound brick, and then you put it in a wheelbarrow, and then you fill it up with warm water, and it is beautiful. It works, in my opinion, so much better than peat moss because the coconut core actually absorbs the water, whereas from my experience, peat moss does not absorb water well at all. And then I've added perlite into it, and then vermiculite. I used to mix that into it, but my mom just recently told me that you should sprinkle it on top because that prevents those bugs from hatching or growing that we always seem to get when I'm starting seeds in the house. We always get those little gnats. That's the one thing I've changed up this year. Instead of mixing the vermiculite in with the soil, I'm just sprinkling it on top of the soil. It's something else that I'm changing this year. Back in 2018, I bought this soil blocker. I've gone back and forth with using it. Last year, I only used my little seed starter trays, and my problem I always have with those is they're so little that the plant grows so fast in them, they dry out, and then you end up having to transfer them to bigger pots. So this year, I'm changing it a little bit, and I'm doing mostly the soil blocker for my seed starting, and I obviously will get less starts from that, but I'm not going to have to upgrade the pots because the seedlings should be fine in there until it's time to go in the garden. And I also feel like it's helping me manage how many seeds to plant, because I think those little seed trays, I end up planting way more than I need just because, you know, those trays are so small that you just end up putting a whole bunch of things in it. Whereas the blocker, it's like, okay, this is going to be one plant. I need probably 8 of this variety of tomatoes. That's all I need. I don't need 16 of this variety. I need 8. And this also ties into keeping you could have a home economy journal. I have a garden journal, but how cool would it be to have a home economy journal of these are things that I'm learning, things that work, things that don't work, and what a cool heirloom to be able to pass those things that you've learned down to your children. Can you imagine if your grandma had a book on things that she learned, or your great grandma of, yeah, when we did this, it didn't work as well, but when I used coconut core and vermiculite and perlite, that seemed to work great. And writing things like that down, because to you it might be very simple, like why would I need to write this down? But to someone else, to your daughter, to your granddaughter, that could be a saved learning experience of, oh, this worked for my mom or for my grandma, surely it'll work for me. So yeah, I think that's cool, having a home economy journal. I do sell journals, I make them, and they would be beautiful home economy journals, but my shop is very slim and I'm very slowly making them. It takes a lot of time to make them and I've been busy in the garden. Hopefully I can get some of those up soon, and garden journals. I do graph paper, that way you could sketch out your garden or measure things out. So my garden journals are graph paper journals. And a lot of times I like to do them in leather. That way the outside can get dirty and water and you can just wipe them off. I hope that this encourages you just to break down to the simplicities of what can I do today to create rather than consume, even if it's just having a pot of herbs outside, or if it's thinking of your garden as what are the things that we consume the most of food-wise, and what if I pour my time and energy into growing those things instead of growing all of the other fun random things that are out there, and each year building on that of adding another thing that you can grow. Like last year, I didn't grow celery. I've grown celery in the past, but I didn't grow it last year, and I was thinking I make a lot of bone broth, and celery is great in bone broth, so I'm going to add celery to my things that I'm growing this year. And to think of your life as building momentum. Everything that you do this year is a growing learning experience that you can build upon next year. And when it comes back to comparison, also think that your skill level is going to be totally unique to other people's skill levels. What you're good at, what they're good at, their life experiences, your life experiences will shape the skills and the talents that we have. So Scott always has to remind me that done is better than perfect. We can look at these Pinterest perfect gardens and think, oh wow, I do not have that skill level, but what you do create with the work of your hands, that is glorifying to the Lord. Whatever you put your hands to, that it is a blessing. Just like the Deuteronomy 28 verse, that believing that I am blessed when I'm out in the field, I'm blessed when I'm in the city, God is with me, He sees me in secret, and I am honoring Him by having the desire to steward our home well, by having the desire to create a beautiful home, to be in creation. There is a Wendell Berry quote. He actually has a book you can just buy called Economy, Freedom, and Community. We have two books of these that are all of his essays combined. But I just think this is so encouraging and such a beautiful picture and vision. If we credit the Bible's description of the relationship between creator and creation, then we cannot deny the spiritual importance of our economic life. Then we must see how religious issues lead to issues of economy, and how issues of economy lead to issues of art. By art, I mean all the ways by which humans make the things they need. If we understand that no artist, no maker, can work except by reworking the works of creation, then we see that by our work, we reveal what we think of the works of God. How we take our lives from this world, how we work, what work we do, how well we use the materials we use, and what we do with them after we have used them, all these are questions of the highest and gravest religious significance. In answering them, we practice or do not practice our religion. The significance and ultimately the quality of the work we do is determined by our understanding of the story in which we are taking part. Isn't that a beautiful thought? We were made in His likeness to also be creators with our hands, to steward the things that He has given us, to build our homes, to have productive home economies, that we're not just consumers, but we are builders, and we are partaking with the Lord in creation by creating in our homes, and the quality in which we do it. So again, it's bringing it back to the simplicity of doing things well, doing things with quality, instead of being on a mad rush, busy, trying to do everything we possibly can. It's what can I do today that stewards what I have well, and do it with peace, not with rush or stress, but with joy and peace. And then I also wanted to end this video with reading Titus 2, and I know I read Titus 2 a lot, but it is just so encouraging to me. Anytime I feel stuck or not inspired, like I don't feel like reading the word, or I just feel apathetic, I always turn to Titus 2 because I feel like the Lord will always highlight something new for me in that season. So Paul says, "But as for you, teach what accords with sound doctrine. Older men are to be sober-minded, dignified, self-controlled, sound in faith, in love, and in steadfastness. Older women, likewise, are to be reverent in behavior, not slanderers or slaves to much wine. They are to teach what is good, and so train the young women to love their husbands and children, to be self-controlled, pure, working at home, kind, and submissive to their own husbands, that the word of God may not be reviled." This stands out to me today, submissive to their own husbands. Again, not submissive to whatever vision Instagram is telling you, or whatever idea YouTube is telling you. Again, getting inspiration and ideas from people, but bringing it back to how does that work for you and your household and you being a helper to your husband. It's just so amazing because we honor God by the daily things we do in our life. Even when life is hard and things come up, that we can find joy in the practical, everyday, simple things. And I think that's where, for me, getting into Titus 2 is very helpful because it brings back the purpose and the vision of what Paul has said that we are to do as women, that we are to teach the younger women these things. And the only way that we can teach anyone anything is by living it out ourselves. So take a look at your home. What are things that you are constant consumers of? And how can you be a producer of those things rather than a consumer? I bless you. I bless the work of your hands. And I hope that you have a wonderful rest of your day.